Coming up on Hear Me Out, are you ready for one of the Twin Ports' biggest musical events of the year? Of course, we're talking about World Accordion Day and the 7th Annual Willard A. Palmer Festival this weekend at the A World of Accordions Museum in downtown Superior. But if you're looking for a different musical festival,
you wandered off in the dark. I left my shoes on the lawn. I couldn't find them in the morning.
The 8-day Homegrown Music Festival continues through the weekend. I'm Robin Washington. All that and more after this.
You shifted back in the park. So where were you going with your eyes so low?
Welcome to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. Music fans in Duluth and Superior are all a-twitter with the Homegrown Music Festival in full swing. As the name implies, the 8-day event features local talent who've made good beyond the Twin Ports, coming back to their roots to share their success and talent.
Thank you.
But that's not the only music festival in the Twin Ports. The area is also home to the A World of Accordions Museum at the Harrington Arts Center at Hammond and Belknap in downtown Superior. That's the venue for a weekend full of accordion music, drawing virtuosos on the instrument from around the world. First for World Accordion Day on Saturday, May 4th, marking the 190th birthday of the accordion, though technically it falls on May 6th. Then on Sunday, May 5th, the museum hosts the 7th annual Willard A. Palmer Festival, named for the late accordionist and composer, whose son, also Willard Palmer, will be in attendance. Other world-class accordionists include Joan Summers and Stasz Wenglewski, whose work we'll hear in a minute. But first, maybe you've been by the museum or seen the imposing yellow brick building across the street from Superior's Government Center, but you never ventured in. That was the case for me until 2 years ago when I met yet another world-class accordionist, Michael Ward Bergman. He was a guest performer with the Duluth Superior Symphony Orchestra, and I just had to tell him about the museum, and we both made a visit. We were met by the museum's founder and director, Helmy Harrington, who gave us a personal tour of the collection of more than 1,300 instruments of every imaginable shape, many that defied the imagination.
Come look. Okay.
Michael Ward Bergman got to play some of them.
This place is daunting on so many levels because not only are there hundreds, thousands of acoustic accordions, but then, oh, come into this room. And then there's another room with every electronic accordion I've ever heard of, plus about another 50 more that I've never heard of. So, I mean, this, I would have to live here for like 2 years to go through all this stuff.
Did you see the Moog machines downstairs?
I was amazed. I mean, because the electronic thing with the accordion is something, obviously, having fallen into processing the accordion is something that
Michael Ward Bergman is at least as impressed with the museum's director as he is with her collection.
Helmy is a unique animal. She can play well. She has a really substantial knowledge of the physics of the acoustics of what's happening, and she knows.
I'm a bit lost as the two compare notes on more and more obscure instruments and techniques of playing them.
Right.
Now here's what you can do. And what do you hear? You hear the top note, which is
right. I'm equally clueless about the luminaries in the accordion universe they speak of.
Oh, do you know?
Although my ears perk up at a discussion of Yo-Yo Ma, who Ward Bergman has played with and helped procure an accordion of his own.
Cut to 5-6 years later, I'm at Tanglewood premiering the piece with Yo-Yo Ma. So he walked in, and I had my electronics set up with little speakers just for the rehearsal, And I said, I got to tell you, it's funny that we're here, because the reason that I'm here is because of this thing that I call the Hyper Accordion, which I stole the name of it from you and Todd Machover. So that it was, came back and he laughed. He was like, yeah, I remember that piece, you know.
As knowledgeable as Harrington is, she does have one question.
What is a Hyper Accordion?
Well, I there's a lot of accordion jokes, and I inadvertently, you know, created a few more because people, oh, does that mean the accordionist is hyper and has had a lot of coffee? Which today might be the case. But I went to Berklee School of Music in Boston as a piano and music technology major. And I just took the accordion along as really an afterthought because I had been playing it a lot. I was teaching kids circus arts. And it turned out I was the only accordionist at Berklee at the time. So I wound up playing a lot of accordion at Berklee, and naturally the accordion kind of bled into my studies with music technology, and I just started putting microphones and using what I was learning with the music technology with the accordion. Some of my studies there led me to this piece that Todd Machover had done. He's a composer at MIT with the Media Lab. He did with Yo-Yo Ma called the Hypercello, which is he had a bunch of microphones and sensors hooked up to the cello and would Yo-Yo would play into the computer and the computer would play back and would interact. And that was premiered at Tanglewood. So I saw that. I was like, oh, I'll call my thing the Hyper Accordion, which just means an extended, you're able to extend, say, do a glissando, you know, using music technology. What's very important to me is utilizing exclusively the sound of the acoustic reed, vibrating reed. That is where the sound comes from. There's no synthesizers or anything that I use. I process that acoustic sound through different types of technology and use pedals and things to manipulate the acoustic signal. Does that answer
so
the question?
So you take a recording and then modify it?
Not a recording. This is all done live.
Harrington is skeptical at first, but she accepts the answer and welcomes the concept into the world of accordions. Meanwhile, Ward Bergman tries out everyone he can.
One she was just telling me, this is a Horner.
We'll go back to this one that you just played.
Oh, right. Out. Yeah. Well, this is, I forget that she told me the name of it. The other one has it on the front, but this has the Helican reeds in it, which are longer, so you get a deeper bass. The bass is really something else. On you can almost hear it vibrating in there.
We're getting into tuba territory there.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and this just has the... It's like a slightly detuned musette sound. Kind of like the Parisian,
you know.
Have that, you know, you can change the registers. This just has the one sound. But quite a sound it is. You know, so this other guy here is this one I had to bring up from downstairs, and then this is the Golo, which I've heard about before. I've never played one, and these are like the top. It's a Horner model, the Golo. I don't know, is it written on here? Yeah, here it is, Golo.
G-O-L-A.
Yeah. So this the actual sound of it is quite exceptional. So you can change the
I should ask her this, and I will, but why are accordions allowed, if you will, to have such a diversity? You know, you can't make clarinets any way you want to, or saxophones, or certainly not a violin. The Stradivarius Commission would not approve.
Right. Well, I think part of it is each culture has made the accordion their own. You know, when the accordion showed up, they maybe made little tweaks, or they liked it to sound a certain way and had to make certain modifications. And then those instruments just evolved on their own, kind of like, you know, the theory of evolution. You know, it's the same thing. You got accordions reproducing themselves all over the planet. And we were talking about that downstairs. It's so incredible to speak with somebody who so has all the accordions that represent all these traditions and then can also speak on a scientific level about what is happening with the actual sound, which some of it goes over my head because she's such an expert, but it's some things that I'm aware of but have never considered, like the harmonic quality of the reeds. You know, just by the way the reeds are made and shaped affects the harmonic content of the actual sound coming out of the reed. And what that means is the harmonic content makes up the tone color that you hear. So the harmonic content of, say, a clarinet versus a saxophone, the harmonics are going to be all different because that's the way that you differentiate between sounds. So the actual, the reeds, I figure she's got all the exact figures, but it's like there's many different types of preferences in the way different traditions like to have the harmonic content. You know, you can hear it in the response, everything, the way the reeds respond to the bellows.
Thank you.
I'm assuming this museum has exceeded your expectations.
Well, you know what's funny is
what did you expect?
Yeah, well, it's just daunting on so many levels. I asked her if she's ever been in touch with the Smithsonian, because this is, without a doubt, it may not happen in my lifetime. This is, the accordion has its community and has its fans, and it's, you know, and is actually becoming more present in the common society. You know, you hear it, the sound of it in jingles and on TV themes more and more.
And composers, contemporary composers are writing for it.
Which is why I'm here. But I think it's been kind of the stigma for so long. It's coming back, and it's going to come back hard. And this place is like ground zero of that. You know, it's going to be, you know, the Smithsonian will come here and be like, wow, why didn't we know about this? Because this is just daunting on so many levels. It's not just like, oh, well, there's a bunch of amazing accordions there. Then you go into another room and it's like, there's a bunch of amazing documents about how to repair the accordions. And then you go turn another way and it's like, we have every piece of sheet music that was written for, you know, from every composer. And, you know, you go and another, there's thousands of recordings. This is the Smithsonian for accordions. I mean, I've been to a few other accordion museums around the world. We were talking about it.
There are others?
There are others. There's one in Germany that I don't know much about, but Helmy was talking about it. I've been to one in Scotland, and it was beautiful and amazing. But the thing that sets this place apart is Helmy and her students, they repair and maintain all the accordions yearly. So they're all playable.
You are a kid in a candy store.
Oh my. It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory here.
Ord Bergman won't be at the celebration this weekend, but the rest of the world-class accordionists will be. And as promised, here's music of two of them, Stas Fingleski and Joan Summers. This is Hear Me Out. Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. Now that you've reserved your tickets for the Accordion Fest, can you still hit homegrown? One of tonight's groups may be the act that embodies what the local band-made Good 8-Day event is all about. Emily Havoc is a Duluth native who says she broke the rules and actually made her performing debut at homegrown. Apparently, you're not supposed to do that. That may have been around the time that I first met her, as she was graduating in journalism from the University of Minnesota Duluth. I was in charge of news for several local papers and offered her a position, which to my surprise she turned down, saying something about pursuing a music career. More than half a dozen homegrowns later, it turns out she clearly made the right choice. My colleague Walt Dizzo of the Dean's List on Wisconsin Public Radio sat down with Emily last year as the transplant to the Twin Cities was set to make another triumphant return home.
My name's Walt Dizzo, one of the DJs here at the station, and I'm honored to have my guest tonight, Emily Havoc, in the studio. Welcome, Emily.
Hello.
Emily, for those who are unfamiliar with your music, give us a quick genre rundown. How do you describe your full band sound?
We've called it a lot of different things. I think we started calling it acoustic. and then we kind of developed more of a folk rock, indie folk style. So we've been calling it that. And then a couple times lately, when people pen it from an outside perspective, they have been calling us alt country.
Alt country.
And I realized that I actually listened to pretty much all what people would call alt country. So I think we're going with that.
That sounds like a fair description.
That sounds good, right? That sounds hip.
And you are a native of the Twin Ports. You are a born and raised Duluthian, correct?
Correct.
You've now flown the coop and you're living in the Twin Cities, but you know, homegrown still allows you to play the homegrown festival, which is awesome, right?
I would be heartbroken.
I think that you, you're an embodiment of what homegrown does. You are a literal homegrown talent, born and raised here, got your first start. When did you first start performing your own music in the Duluth area?
At homegrown.
What?
I think, which is rare, and I shouldn't even say that.
Wait, your first show was at Homegrown.
Pretty much. And so they really shouldn't have let me in, but can I say this on the air?
Oh, yeah.
So we got so lucky. I had done open mic nights, and I had been writing, you know, but we wanted to apply for Homegrown, and so I got a band of friends together, and we started playing together, and I think the only reason we got in was I had put up this track that I recorded all the instruments myself on GarageBand, and I put it up on SoundCloud, and Paul Lundgren found it, and so he put it up on Perfect Duluth Day, and so suddenly I was like, I actually had something to, you know, show them. And I think that's why we got in. But yeah, so I was super nervous. We played at Teatro. And it was like mostly, I mean, it was just all our friends, basically. But that was our first show, and it was amazing. And we had a blast, even though we were nervous. And
How old were you? What year was that?
It was 2011, I think. Yeah. So I've been doing it this will be my seventh Homegrown.
I don't know if that's ever happened where someone's first like real out public set is at Homegrown.
So I do not recommend. Usually you have to like have proven your chops a little bit. So
that's awesome though.
In.
So
yeah.
you recorded everything yourself. So you play every instrument in your band. So there's Emily Havoc in the 35 is you playing 35 instruments on stage, correct?
Correct. Yes. Several trombones and a tuba.
That's fantastic.
34 trombones. No, it is. Now we have diversified into the 35s are Lisa Wentworth on vocals, Alyssa Mesdahl on violin, Brian Wentworth on electric guitar, Bo Walsh on banjo and vocals, Luke Myro on drums, and Matt Preuss on bass. We've got a pretty well-rounded
And you've been playing with that crew for a while now, right?
Yeah, we played, I think our first show as a band was at Sacred Heart Homegrown, actually, like a few years ago. Homegrown's a very pivotal time for us.
Yeah.
So, and we've been playing together like 4 or 5 years, probably.
Who did you open for some band that people kind of know about, right?
Yeah, I don't know. People came to see us and they were like, I guess this band called Low is playing next. And I guess they stuck around and people seemed to like them.
Was that your biggest
minimalist
show so far in your career? Or have you played?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the biggest crowd and for us just like the biggest moment. We love Low, so we were so excited to open for them.
And you did amazing. Was that the year of the Bats too?
No, but I was there for the Bats. Oh. The Bats were like 3 years ago. That's one of the best Homegrown.
Right. The women's choir played.
Oh, it was such a good night. It was magical. Yeah, but I was like, I couldn't get in. It was so crowded. So I was standing in the back and like this bat flew by. It was very confusing.
So the 35s have been your band for a couple years, but it's a recent name change.
Yeah.
When did the band get their name, I guess, and how did that happen?
I've been wanting to name the band for a while because I felt really uncomfortable just operating under my name when it's such a communal effort. You know, we really, everyone's so invested and works really hard. And like the music, if it was just me by myself, would be so lame. And so it just didn't feel, you know what I mean? It just didn't feel like it's not a solo project anymore. And so I think I've been kind of pushing and no one else cared, but I just really wanted to name it. So I got the idea because I'm always driving up and down Interstate 35 for practices and shows. Because the rest of the band lives in Duluth still. So, yeah, so I kind of suggested it, and everyone was like, it was the first band name we had thought of that we didn't hate. And I think because we're recording a new album, we thought it was a good time to attempt a little rebrand because we're doing a lot of promotion crap that we don't usually do. Can I say crap on the radio?
You just did, yeah. So you've got a new record in the works. We'll talk about that a little later on. Your last record, your debut record as a full band, You Were the City, came out in 2016. To huge positive reviews. Was that something that was like shocking to you, or did you feel confident going into the process?
No, I didn't feel confident at all. I mean, I liked the music. I think we were happy with it, but we had never recorded. And so it was a huge learning curve, and we were just kind of like, it was scary. It was scary to put it out there for sure. So, I mean, I was confident in it when we finished it. But going in, I didn't know if we would like what would come. You know, you just don't know. You're
right.
Like, we could do this and it could be just terrible. And then we wasted months of our time.
Well, I'm so happy. It sounds great. It's one of those records that we still play at the radio station all the time. It's one of my favorites. It's one of the best recorded records. I think it really does highlight every part of the band, which not every recording does. Who did you work with? And are you changing it up for this new record? Or
Yeah, sort of both. We are working with some of the same people. We worked with Jason Wusso at Beaner Central. We recorded there and had an amazing experience. Jason really made that album, and he was one of the people who encouraged me to record. So I'm super grateful for him to kind of, he gave me some of the courage I needed, I think, to do it. So he did such a good job of, and he helped us kind of arrange songs, and he really did such a great job engineering that. And then Jason McGlone, another Jason, he's the drummer for the Fontanelles, which is a semi-Duluth-based band. And he mixed it, and he really just brought, like, this new life to it. And so a lot of that, like, highlighting the instruments, and his mixes are just so, you know, perfect and even. Like, he has this way of bringing everyone's best out in the mix. So he did an amazing job with that. And we are working with him again. But we have decided we're not actually doing it in a studio this time. We are using a friend's cabin a little outside of Duluth. So it's kind of a new adventure. But
is that friend Justin Vernon by chance?
Yeah. So you may have heard of him. It's in the woods of Wisconsin. No, it's just a cabin a little outside of Duluth. And because everyone in the band almost has kids. And we just wanted a place that would be laid back. I mean, it'll be summer, so the kids can play outside. So Jason McGlone is going to actually bring in the gear, and we're going to record it there, and he'll be kind of engineering it this time.
Cool. And it's great that you can work with somebody you're familiar with in the studio, for sure.
Yeah, we're all so comfortable with Jason, and he knows our music really well, so.
We're going to pause real quick and play a song, because we haven't got to hear your playing yet. You mentioned Jason Wusso from Beaners, who was part of the first album,
yeah,
and is probably still an important part of your life.
Absolutely.
Kind of one of those places. So many people in the Twin Ports have gotten their start on the stage at mm-hmm. Beaners. We're going to play a track from your record that you actually performed live from the Beaners Comp in the 1 Week Live Volume 14, the track Sea Love. Do you want to say anything about this recording and what this song means to you?
Yeah, you know, it's a special song. It's kind of about that changing tide where something difficult happens and you feel like you're never going to get better, you know, and then you wake up one day and you're a little bit better.
We're going to hear a track right now. This is Emily Havoc, and you weren't the 35s at the time.
But it is the same band. Yeah.
Emily Havoc from 1 Week Live, Volume 14. This is Sea Love.
I hear you laugh through the screen door. In the heavy warmth on the couch, not a note of despair in your voice this time, not a hint that you might give up, not a last ditch look. See love, time heals what you never thought it would. See love, love ends, but it doesn't kill the root. See your love, my love, nothing ever dies. See love, things come back to life, things come back to life, and you got a new job. It's not like the old one, you don't like those old friends. You wake in the morning, you get out of bed, you silence the voices of fear left in your head. See love, time heals what you never thought it would. Love, nothing ever dies. See love.
Any recording with a bunch of applause is a good sign, right, Emily Havoc?
Thank you. That's my token song ending.
I love it. That's Emily Havoc, and now known Emily Havoc and 35s. That's from the 1 week live compilation at Beaners. I love your sound. I love the way that you and Lisa work together vocally. It sounds like you've known each other all your lives, and you've just like are talking and singing in rhythms.
Yeah, we have. I mean, she's basically a sister. I've known her since birth. Our parents were friends. And so I think that's part of why we have that, you know, tight rhythm together, is because we have been talking to each other for 27 years and singing together. Yeah, she's amazing. She is just the best harmonizer I know. She doesn't really make mistakes. And she finds harmonies so naturally, you know, so she's so, so fun to sing with.
And you said that she's like a busy, she has a full-time job, she's got kids, and she's a blogger now
as well?
She's
Superwoman, yeah. I don't know how she does it. Yep, they've got three kids, her and Brian, they're both in the van. They still make all the van stuff happen. She's working full-time, she's a school counselor, and she has started in the last year this food blog that's like blowing up online. It's called Lake Superior Kitchen, and I'm always getting recipes from it. She's an amazing cook, and her mom has always been a cook, and her mom baked a lot growing up, and so she's got all these great recipes, and a lot of them are like Whole30 or paleo, really healthy, and because she's a mom and she's busy, I feel like they're very efficient, you know, and so it's really fun. I don't know when she's doing that. She takes these beautiful pictures of all these meals she makes, and yeah, so check out that blog if you need some new recipes or just want to see really pretty pictures of food, because she's also a great photographer.
Lake Superior Kitchen, yeah.
Lake Superior Kitchen.
So is all the pressure on her and Brian for band practices to bring food? Like, are they on snack duty all the time?
No, we try to relieve them of that, but they still do once in a while. And they feed us dinner a lot.
Okay.
That's the main burden.
So, Emily, you're playing Homegrown. You've mentioned this is your seventh Homegrown, is that correct?
Yeah, I think so.
That's awesome. You not only love performing, but you are also a participant in making the festival kind of happen, right? You're not on the steering committee, but mm-hmm. you've been active in the field guide. How did you get started with that, and what kind of roles have you played in that process?
Yeah, I might have started writing for Homegrown while I was playing. The first time I played Homegrown, too, I interned at Perfect Duluth Day back in college around that same time. And so I was writing for Perfect Duluth Day, and Paul Lundgren, who runs Perfect Duluth Day, also put together the field guide. So he recruited me to write some band bios. And I've been writing for the field guide since the same year. And I have recently become kickball article girl. I did it off and on. We passed that article around like a hot potato, if you will. No one ever wants to do it because like no one knows sports, and you actually have to keep track of the goals and like find out who's playing what. So this year,
say goals? Yeah, I mean it.
The runs.
Yeah, that's about
the runs.
Yeah.
So I'm not a sportser, but I'm dedicated and hardworking, and I watch carefully. And I write the thing, you know. So what are you gonna do? We passed it around, but it's landed back on me. So actually, I'm going to write it for the second year in a row, or maybe third year. And I think I'm tied for the record right now of doing it the most. But this past year, every year like we miss some critical detail, and so there's a very important kick, and I did not get the person's name. So
this is your chance to get it right.
No, but I got it right now. So Paul emails me and he says, who was the guy in the blue shirt in the seventh inning, you know, who made this kick? I was like, Paul, are you joking? He's like, no, we need his name. It was a very important kick. So I did a little internet sleuthing. Actually, he said, I think he was in this band like 5 years ago. He gave me the name of the band. So I find the band on Facebook. I contacted someone else in the band. They said, hey, I think it's this guy. He has a different pseudonym on Facebook. I messaged him. I said, are you this man? And he said, yeah, that was me. So we got his name. It's Alec Larson. Congratulations, Alex.
Does Alec even play in a band anymore? Because this
yes.
is the kind. Okay, good. What band is he playing now?
I don't remember.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter.
But now, yeah, it's broadened past Friday, Saturday bands.
Well, that's the thing that's always confusing, is that there's so many bands playing Homegrown. There's over 150 bands playing. So if you average it out and say three people per band, right? Because, you know, there's solo acts, and then there's you, and then there's, you know, whatever, you know, the world beat drummers with 75 children. So anyway, there's three bands. So that's a lot. That's like 500 people that can play kickball. There are chances that people are just sneaking in who've not played in bands.
Absolutely.
How do you, are you part of the official, like, monitoring that?
Like,
or are you just a reporter?
Team?
Yeah.
No, I'm just the reporter. I just watch. I can't get involved. That would be unethical.
Okay.
I've actually been accused of biased coverage in my last writing.
By whom?
Of mentioning the Saturday team too much, even though they won. So this year, I plan to mention the Friday team.
Just
I'm going
much.
To actually count my references and make sure they're even.
But I mean, if you.
It's a hot topic.
Yeah, you know? But if you People win the intense. Game and you're like dominating, you shouldn't even mention the other team. Who cares?
Well, but I kind of tend to mention the underdogs because there's more going on if you're trying to catch up. You know, there's
that makes
a lot
sense.
More like.
But you really.
Team bolstering.
You really only remember the winners. Like, I know Michael Jordan. I don't know about anything about Craig Elo. I mean, I know him, but.
Who's that?
He's the guy who. Was in the poster that Jordan made that jump shot over. Yeah, anyway. I'm a sports nerd, so I would
oh
know that.
God.
But yeah. So besides kickball, have you ever gotten to play kickball since you are a reporter? Is that something that you've never got to participate?
I have not participated in kickball, but that's okay. I've been on kickball teams, and I have not fared well.
Any of your bandmates play?
I don't think that they have played in it. Maybe this will be our year.
I think this year you need to recruit one of the 35.
Wanted to represent.
And then just write about them in the field guide.
And only mention my band over
yeah.
and over. That would actually be a more useful form of bias for me.
Right. I mean, it's not like you're making your living on writing for field guides, right? So you wrote a bunch of bios this year and years past. You're a lover of Homegrown. You
mm-hmm.
you want to attend every single night if possible. I understand that jobs and responsibilities take that away from you. Do you get a lot of bands asking about who wrote their guide? A lot of bands think that's the best write-up that's ever happened from them. So.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah, I don't know. People are sometimes picky about it, and sometimes they don't care at all. I've mostly just had people who are really chill. And
I'm excited for your show. Is there anything else that we should know about your future plans? Where can we find that music that we liked so much that we heard today?
Yeah, so we've got a website, emilyandthe35s.com. And we're also on Facebook, Emily Havoc and the 35s.
Sweet. Your last record, You Were the City, was one of my favorites of the year. We're going to end the interview tonight with one more song from you, fitting for Homegrown. It's called Late Night Show, as there are plenty of late night shows that you and I will both be attending all
yeah.
week long. Thank you so much, Emily Havoc, for being part of this.
Thanks, Walt.
This is Late Night Show for Emily Havoc and 35s.
In the late night, under the porch light, you... told me you were scared.
That's Emily Havoc speaking with Wisconsin Public Radio's Walt Dizzo on the eve of her Homegrown performance last year. Emily Havoc and the 35s play tonight, Friday, May 3rd, at 11 p.m. at Blacklist Artesian Ales, 120 East Superior in downtown Duluth. This is Hear Me Out.
I left my shoes on the lawn. I couldn't find them in the morning. Followed you to your car. I put my hand on your heart. You shifted back in the park. So where were you going with your eyes so low? And what were you hoping for? You ran from home. And who did you think that you were? Up in Chicago at your late night show.
Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. And with me in the studio is Danielle Kading, or as we call her in person, Danny. Welcome, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
Who is here to give us a wrap-up of this week's news.
Yes. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin says the federal small shipyard grant program has, quote, fallen into disrepair. Baldwin serves on the Senate Appropriations Committee. She says the program's funding should be bumped up from its current $20 million to $35 million. The program gives grants to small shipyards to upgrade equipment, make repairs, and train workers.
This is something that's pretty key to our commerce by water. And so just like large shipyards, we want to make sure that our smaller shipyards have the ability to upgrade and remain relevant in the 21st century.
Fraser Shipyards in Superior is among those that have received grants. Baldwin also wants a provision to ensure all equipment purchased through the grant program be made in America. She says a loophole now allows companies to buy products made in foreign countries.
I'm wondering, and I'm sure you don't know the answer to this, although you know practically everything there is to know about shipyards on Lake Superior.
That's not true, but okay. I will try my best.
So I'm wondering what the difference is. Where's the line of demarcation between a small shipyard and a large shipyard?
I actually just found this out. It's
told you know everything.
Under this grant program, it's shipyards that have fewer than 1,200 employees.
So they measure it by employees, because I would measure it like by the size of the boats. Have you looked out there? You know, hey, can we put a 1,000-footer, and we call them 1,000-footers, not the other words for
right.
it. Right. Can we put a 1,000-footer in your small shipyard? What small shipyard can take an ore boat?
Yeah, no, they would have to be at least 1,000-footers. And you, what would you do, just cut it off after that? I don't know.
Sorry, sir, this is a small shipyard. You have to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But apparently, so Fraser qualifies as a small shipyard.
Yes, because on average, I want to say during the winter, they have the most employees, which is around 200. So, yeah, they qualify as a small shipyard.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that you knew the answer to that one.
One of the few times I know all the answers.
What else is going on?
The city of Superior will begin accepting and treating wastewater from Husky Energy's oil refinery under a new deal reached with the company. Local officials say the move will generate revenue for the city and benefit a nearby stream. The oil refinery has its own wastewater treatment plant that discharges into nearby Newton Creek. Superior Mayor Jim Payne announced this week that Husky would discharge into the city's system,
which will help us protect Lake Superior and bring over $1 million in new revenue to the city of Superior.
The city's stormwater manager, Diane Nelson, says talks with Husky began before the explosion and fires last spring. She says the refinery's wastewater will be treated twice and discharged into a Lake Superior bay.
When you take that effluent out of Newton Creek, it's only going to be better for the creek and the organisms that are living in it.
A Husky spokeswoman says it's seeking a permit from the city. The Wisconsin DNR says Husky is making the move to meet more stringent phosphorus standards aimed at reducing algae growth in state waters. The Diocese of Duluth has reached a settlement with dozens of people who say they were abused as children by its priests. The attorney for 125 claimants in the diocese bankruptcy case, Jeff Anderson, says the agreement requires the diocese to pay them $40 million. The settlement also requires the diocese to release the files of 37 priests that it has classified as credibly accused. The diocese filed for bankruptcy in 2015. Anderson says once the diocese reorganization plan is approved at bankruptcy court, the 125 claimants will formally vote on the plan. A claims reviewer will determine how much each claimant will be paid. The settlement requires the diocese, its parishes, and other Catholic entities to pay $10 million. The rest will be funded by its insurance carriers. Foxconn Technology Group CEO Terry Gao has met with President Donald Trump to discuss the company's ever-changing Wisconsin project. Foxconn confirmed the meeting on Thursday, but offered few details on what was discussed. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers says Foxconn approached him about changing the state's contract with the worldwide electronics leader. The current deal makes more than $4 billion in state and local tax credits available to Foxconn if it invests $9 billion and hires 13,000 people. But Foxconn has reduced the size of the display screen factory it plans to build, and Evers says he thinks fewer people will be hired. Foxconn says Gao and Trump, quote, discussed the latest updates and the positive progress of the project, among other things. Gao announced last month he is running to be president of Taiwan.
You know, we would never comment on each other's announcing abilities, as I say, a bunch of uhs there and everything. But I noticed you stumbled.
I did.
13,000, and I'm wondering if this is for listeners, astute listeners, careful listeners to the show who listen every week and hang on our every word. In fact, I almost want to make a contest. If you know why I think Danny stumbled on 13,000. So last week we had a piece about 30,000. was it 30,000 or 26,000?
It was 26,000.
26,000 hogs that are proposed to be brought to Wisconsin or raised in Wisconsin in a hog farm. And it brought to mind, at least to my mind, a story about 30,000 pigs floating down a river in Australia. This is a true story. It was reported in the paper that way. Except that they meant to say 30 sows and pigs, just 30 sows and pigs. So it's my fault that Danny will never be able to say thousand again. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. Well, on to other news then. The divided Wisconsin Supreme Court has restored 82 appointees of former Governor Scott Walker who were confirmed during a lame duck legislative session. The order issued late Tuesday is a victory for Republicans who control the legislature and who had argued the appointees were legally confirmed and should be allowed to remain in their jobs. Democratic Governor Tony Evers argued the appointees were invalidated after a lower court ruled that the entire lame duck session was unconstitutional. Days later, an appeals court put that ruling on hold, creating more confusion about the status of the 15 people Evers did not reappoint. The Supreme Court, on a 4-3 vote, overturned a decision by a state appeals court that had sided with Evers. Those affected by the ruling include a Public Service Commission member and two University of Wisconsin system regents.
And that's your wrap-up?
And that's the news.
Well, not quite. I got something for you.
Oh, good.
I'm capable of reading the paper.
It seems like a requirement in your line of work.
It should be. But it's just an interesting little feature in the Superior Telegram from Tuesday. New businesses and businesses that have relocated to Superior. See that?
Yep.
It's got a pretty cool map, and I can see it looks like a dozen or so. Makes us feel good about the commerce in the area. Superior Impact Nutrition, Empire Coffee. Heard of any of these? Been to them?
I've been to Empire Coffee, but I've not had their coffee or food yet, which I plan to do.
Okay, you've been
soon.
In the building.
I've been in the building, but I haven't had any of their food.
How about Twisted Pastries?
I haven't been there yet. Where is that?
That's it. See, it's got an address. This is really cool. Thank you very much, Superior Telegram. 1418 Tower Avenue.
Okay, so it's that very opened close 2018. To VIP. Okay.
Yeah, right. Wasabi, also on Tower Avenue.
I want to try their sushi. I've heard good things about it.
Okay. Apple House CBD. So what's CBD? I think you're hipper on this stuff
CBD.
Than I am.
Would you be talking about the cannabinoid oil?
You can do that in Wisconsin?
It's so hazy right now with the state law.
All right, if you don't know it yet.
It's just been a really confusing issue because they made it so that you could get a prescription for it, but you couldn't manufacture or sell it. But now people have begun to manufacture and sell it.
Well, it's also Apple House, so maybe they sell apples. And I think along the same lines, Ignite Vapor and Tobacco, 502 Hammond Avenue. I think that's as much as we can say. The FCC probably prohibits us from saying anything else that would encourage tobacco use. So. Well, thank you, Danny.
And thanks, Robin.
That's it for this week's show. Hear Me Out is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Emily Havoc or Stasz Wrzynglewski. You decide which is which.